Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Don Kimmerling.
Gary Purdom.
And I'm Harry McDonald.
All right.
Yeah, and we're here to present the Voice of Reason, a radio show for reasonable people and other people that might consider becoming reasonable. And we are non-transcendent this morning. I'm pretty untranscendent. Well, maybe a little more than usual, but we are here for advocates of science and rationalism and humanism and atheists and free thinkers, etc. And what we came in for this morning with Harry McDonald here. Greg still is pacing the floor behind us here. He's still here. And we'll be on to present the schedule later. There's a lawsuit in Kansas against the Kansas State School Board by an organization called COPE, and I've forgotten the acronym.
Stands for Citizens for Objective Public Education.
Yeah, right. And John Calvert, an old design advocate, which is a form of creationism, of course, is leading the charge as this organization. They're suing this Kansas State School Board and a list as long as your arm of other people and organizations, and trying to say that the new science standards in Kansas are advocating secular humanism and atheism and materialism directly and forcefully. Is that not right?
That's pretty much what they're alleging.
And do they have any reason to believe that? Is there anything in the new science standards that mentions secular humanism or atheism?
No. There's one of the things that they are alleging is that studying evolution, you know, in particular, and some other things in the abstract, cause students to think about the questions of origins. And because science itself restricts scientific conclusions to natural causes, they're saying that if they question where life came from in class, but are dealing only with natural conclusions, natural explanations, then that would lead them, that would be like proselytizing a religion. As Calvert's the lawsuit alleges, it's a non-theistic religion.
Yeah.
I know.
It looks like that ought to be enough to get it dismissed automatically, but
well,
it doesn't, it seems.
Well, it hasn't been dismissed, but to my knowledge, there, other than filing the lawsuit, there has been no action. There's been no initial hearing that I am aware of. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think there's been a chance to toss it yet.
But it has been filed in U.S. District Court, and I assume that they wanted to, you know, even if it doesn't, and it probably won't be adjudicated in their way by that court, that they will go on and go to another court and then maybe to the Supreme Court.
Oh, I'm sure that is Calvert's wish. Yeah. I shouldn't say I'm sure, but...
Oh, it's pretty presumably.
I would predict that, but
yeah.
I'm trying to be scientific.
Yeah.
And not allege things I don't have a whole lot of evidence for.
Yeah. Now, he mentions that this starts at kindergarten, that atheism and materialism are indoctrinated into kids starting at kindergarten. And I can hardly imagine a kindergartner standing up and reciting a list of cosmological principles that relate to materialism.
Yes, and I guarantee you, if you look at the standards, which are available online, and anybody can examine them, there's nothing in kindergarten or first grade or second grade or on up for a ways that would require any kid to question their belief system as such.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty bogus claim. Not being a lawyer, I'm not aware of all the background cases that have been adjudicated on this issue, but Josh Rosenow from the National Center for Science Education, when the suit was filed, and he had a chance to read it, he commented, and I'll read a comment if that's all right.
Sure.
And he says that his point, this is Calvert's point here, is that teaching only evolution and methodological naturalism has religious implications for students and thus violates the First Amendment. But the interesting thing is, as Rosenow goes on to say, in 2005, and I think he actually got that wrong when I looked it up, it was a 2001 brief to the State Board of Education, Calvert rightly cited Pelosa versus Capistrano and acknowledged, and this is a quote from Calvert, "It should be noted that secular humanism and other broad concepts that generate religious implications have been held not to constitute a religion for Establishment Clause purposes. Furthermore, the courts have ruled that the Establishment Clause is not violated simply because the material to be taught happens to coincide or harmonize with the tenets of some or all religions." So, to me, there's been a court case that pretty well knocks out all the arguments that Calvert made. And interestingly, Calvert himself, in a previous brief, acknowledges what I would see as essentially that to be the situation. Hmm. He seems to have forgotten that he had that legal opinion in 2001 by filing this brief, or this lawsuit, rather.
How convenient.
Yes, I mean, and it does, you know, like we sit here and we think this is already settled law, but they always, the creationists, the intelligent design advocates, try to find a new nuance. So he thinks he's nuanced something, and a judge may feel he has. We'll see, I guess, when I would anticipate a motion to dismiss based on some grounds like the ones that I just read.
Yeah.
And we'll see if a judge views the nuances of this particular lawsuit to be any different than those.
Yeah. Well, people are allowed to change their mind. He has a this lawsuit itself has a very long list of points. And like I say, he mentions that this is about indoctrination. The orthodoxy called, for example, here's one point, number eight, the orthodoxy called methodological naturalism, which you just mentioned, or scientific materialism, holds that explanations of the cause and nature of natural phenomena may only use natural, material, or mechanistic causes and must assume that supernatural and teleological or design conceptions of nature are invalid. In parentheses, he shortens that to the orthodoxy. And I don't know. I don't know exactly. I haven't reviewed the standards lately. I don't know. I don't think they don't mention methodological naturalism either, do they?
No, but essentially what is that term implies is part of the standards in terms of how we approach things. And so saying that science uses methodological naturalism is correct.
Yeah.
The important thing here, he conflates methodological naturalism with, I guess I'd call it absolute naturalism, in that naturalism would apply there is no explanation other than the natural explanation. Science can't actually establish that, just like you can't find evidence that God directly intervened. You can't find and prove a negative. You can't, you know, I mean, you can't prove that there is an absence of God intervening. So science takes this methodological naturalism. Since we can't test the supernatural by scientific methods, then we just assume, for purposes of our procedure, that there is no other explanation. That doesn't have science then taking an official position one way or another. Individual scientists form their own opinions, just like everybody else does. have their own beliefs. But science as a discipline says, since we can't test the supernatural, and our practice with reason requires us to have evidence for what we do, then we're going to use methodological naturalism. So Calvert's assertion there about the methodological naturalism is accurate. What's inaccurate in what he calls the orthodoxy is that it implies that that means individuals it implies then that the supernatural and teleological or design conceptions of nature are invalid. And it really doesn't take that position. It doesn't say they're invalid. It just says science can't address them, so it's a moot point. We're not gonna attempt to solve those questions with science.
Yeah. Well, we all live in the natural world. I mean, he has to jump in his car and use natural resources, including petroleum and so forth, to get to the courtroom to stand in front of the judge, and he uses the same floors that we do, and he doesn't walk in the air and so forth. I assume I've never seen him do that.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so it seems like we have to agree that we live in a natural world. We have that in common. Now he may have a direct line to God. I don't know. I doubt it. If he does, I think he should share it with us. And if he has some direct knowledge of a supernatural world, he should be able to relate that in a particular way. Now, as far as the natural world being very very complex and awe-inspiring, I think we all are awe-inspired by the natural world, aren't we? And some people may take a theological interpretation from that. As far as presenting something in the classroom, I mean, there may be, I don't know, 50,000 religions around the world or something. We can't present all of those. It seems like it's a practical matter that we have to stick to the natural world.
Right. I mean, and science is about the observable and testable, and the supernatural is not testable. It is subject only to beliefs, which everybody has their own set of beliefs, but they're not testable. One can look at something and say that's consistent with my belief, but that's far from a test, repeatable, etc. I found it interesting. I was gone to watch K-State run it over KU yesterday afternoon, and got home last evening and posted on my Facebook that I was going to be on this morning, and I got a few responses and mostly supportive, etc. I had one interesting former student that said, well, you know, there are many intelligent people and they have different opinions and this sort of thing, which is all true. What I've heard numerous times from people that want to play fair, that really this is not a big personal issue to them, but they just, you know, when people say, well, we need to teach the controversy, and they say, well, if two people have different ideas, we should be egalitarian and we should teach them both. But it fascinates me. It's kind of going back to your previous comment that people are willing to use the products of science, period. Okay, but when scientific findings contradict their personal beliefs, then it's science that's wrong. They trust science in all these things, like you were talking about, their cars and medicine and, you know, their lives when you get in a spaceship. And when you get in a plane and fly someplace.
I always get a religious experience flying myself. A quote religious experience. I mean, I get this feeling that this is a humanistic triumph when I'm flying through the air at 30,000 feet. I mean, it's just, you know, you get to see a little bit of the roundness of the horizon and something that you couldn't do without science.
Right. So it fascinates me that people think that scientific understandings are subject to popular vote or personal belief. You know, like, I choose to believe in gravity, and I don't choose to believe in photosynthesis, you know? I'm speaking for myself, and, yeah. You know, I find that really hard, and I find it's a, you know, it, this is one of those things where I will say that science education has done a poor job for decades, maybe forever. I wasn't around forever, but because we have... this is all about the next generation science standards, this lawsuit, asking that the state not implement these standards. And we had national standards in 1996, and they were an improvement over just the hodgepodge we had state by state writing up the standards. But this one has a better vision of what we need to be doing with students to get them to develop an understanding, in this case, of how science works and how we come to scientific understandings, and then hopefully be a little more confident in using science as the best predictor of what's going to happen in the natural world. Mm-hmm. And so it would be a real shame if this lawsuit were to prevail and we would be unable to do a better job of educating our students.
Now, you're a former teacher. I didn't even give you your credentials at the top of the hour, and I should have. You're a former teacher and now an educational consultant, and I forgot your position at the Kansas Citizens for Science.
Well, I'm president of Kansas Citizens for Science.
You're the president, and you do the Science Cafe once a month out at... coaches in Overland Park,
right?
And I don't exactly know your religious preferences, and I don't necessarily need to get into them. But you're a former biology teacher yourself. Was that your primary class? Biology?
Yes.
Did you teach physics and chemistry? Also,
I taught chemistry 1 year when they needed one section of chemistry, and so I was up. It was good for me. That was a good year. Any of you out there that had me that year, I'm sorry. But it was good for me. I don't know if it was good for the students. Because at that time, I was about 15 years into my career. And so it had been 15 years since I'd had a chemistry class. And it was good for me to have to go back and review my chemistry. I taught biology for 32 years.
That's a pretty good run. Now, I took science class from a man who was an actual preacher. He was a preacher at a local church. I never did go to one of his sermons or anything, but I could barely tell that he was a preacher when I was listening to him, and I got an excellent science education. When I went to college, I didn't take biology in college. I took biology and physics and chemistry from him, though, and when I went to do the physics and chemistry in college, I had very little trouble passing those courses because I had such an excellent education from him. And he used the Shams Outline series, which is a college-level book. I don't know. Did you ever use those in high school?
No.
And it is entirely my point is that it's entirely possible to teach an excellent science course and not include religion.
Oh, absolutely.
Theological.
Right.
In fact, I think it's preferable, but, you know, here's a man of the cloth, so to speak. I don't even know what sect he was a member of. He lived in a different town than I did, but he's pretty committed Christian if he's a preacher, you know, and there he is teaching excellent science.
One hopes so, anyway.
Well, he did teach excellent science.
I meant one hopes he's a dedicated Christian.
Yeah, well, I assume he was. I don't know. But it is entirely possible to do both. And of course, we both know Keith Miller, who's, I think that's his first name.
Yes.
The professor at K-State, who is both an excellent geology teacher. He's
right.
A geology teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He entirely embraces all the knowledge accumulated by science about the geological age of the Earth and the evolution of life on Earth, etc. And is at the same time a very committed Christian. I mean, when we sat down at a Kansas Citizens for Science meeting one time on a committee, I had a very hard time talking to the guy in a certain sense, not because of his science, but because of his religion. He wanted to get involved in the religion when he was doing this, but he is an excellent scientist.
Yes, and on our board at Kansas Citizens for Science, you mentioned ministers. We have a retired Presbyterian minister, Douglas Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
And who studied chemistry for his undergraduate work before he went to seminary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's definitely true that scientific understanding doesn't cause one to lose their faith. It is also accurate that there are religious beliefs that contradict observation of the natural world. And I can understand why those people struggle with their personal beliefs.
Yeah.
But that's what most of these lawsuits are about, is people trying to require the courts to support their religious belief. And justify their belief system. It's not enough for them just to believe what they believe. You know, they feel challenged by the natural world, would be my observation. And it's unfortunate that embroils us time and time again in this sort of thing. Interestingly, in that one Pelosi lawsuit that I mentioned earlier, the ruling was that was a frivolous lawsuit, and therefore the expenses of the defendants had to be paid by the plaintiff. They eventually changed that because a higher court found one little snippet of something that could be considered not frivolous, so they didn't make the person pay for the expenses. So I don't know what will happen in this one. It might be thrown out, but the state is still going to be out some money defending itself one way or another. I do find it interesting the selection of lawyers for the defense. The Department of Education is also mentioned in the suit, as well as the Commissioner Diane DeBacher. It's my understanding both the department and Diane will be represented by the legal counsel for the Department of Ed, Cheryl Whalen, but the State Board of Education, and I'm not sure which, all I've read in the newspaper is that some members of the State Board have asked Attorney Generals to defend them, which is by Constitution and or law, I'm not sure exactly which, but that's the Attorney General is charged with defending state officials, both collectively as the board and individually if they ask. And mm-hmm. and the board has asked that be done, and some individuals on the board have asked that to be done. I was a little worried when I heard that. I thought, well, how hard is the Attorney General, who's in the Brownback administration and who definitely would side with this lawsuit personally, how hard is a member of his administration going to defend the Board of Education? I have been, I don't know if I'd say assured, but friends, lawyer friends of mine say that they find Attorney General Schmidt to be a good lawyer and an honest person, and will likely do a good job of defending him on that. But we'll have to see. Certainly there is enough legal precedent on this and enough strategy, et cetera, like the Dover case in 2005 in, yes, Pennsylvania, it shouldn't be hard to put together a successful defensive strategy if one works at it. So,
given the nature of the world, the political world that we live in these days, nothing is sure.
Yeah, so in any case, that's the decision that the department has made, going with their in-house lawyer, and the Board of Education going with the Attorney General. At least as a collective body. So we'll see. I am here today as an individual, not as the president of Kansas Citizens for Science. So, but that said, I can tell you that Kansas Citizens for Science has offered their support to both the department, Commissioner DeBacher, and the State Board of Education in whatever way we can serve. And the National Center for Science Education has done the same thing. Not that they have to consult us on anything, but, you know, at least we've had some experience in this and offer whatever services we can to the defense team.
Any idea when this is going to come before the court, if they go to any proceedings?
No, I did, after we talked and you invited me here this morning, I did try to contact Janet Waugh, but I was to find out things like that. But I was gone most of the day yesterday, and I haven't been able to communicate with her. I do know, or I shouldn't say I know, but what little I know about the law, since she is on the board and they are being sued and all that, you get that comment about, well, I can't talk about an ongoing lawsuit.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is one of the things where boards can sit in executive session to discuss law, you know, suits and that sort of thing, both in defense and in suing someone. So I know that ethically there are things that they aren't going to share with me.
Yeah.
But
sure.
I think things like when it's on the docket, who the lawyers are, you know, and there are things that will be public knowledge. And so I hope at some point we'll hear from that. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to find out before I came here today how the suit's going to proceed.
Well, of course, Kansas has been terrifically embarrassed by creationists and intelligent design advocates, quote, intelligent design advocates. And twice now, the Kansas State School Board has passed policies that they wrote, basically, right,
yeah,
or included their intelligent design principles. And I was a little surprised to see that the vote on the new science standard was 8-2. It was a kind of a lopsided vote on the Kansas State School Board. So it seems
I wasn't
like the
surprised
board,
by that, though.
You weren't, though, huh?
Well, just because I know who the members of the board were.
Okay. But I don't know them personally. But you know, given the history of Kansas, I thought it was probably going to be a little closer. Has the population of Kansas actually realized their embarrassment and come to realize that science is a very, very important aspect of their children's education?
Well, and I'd like to say that that's the situation. I do know that the current sitting board, as you can see, the majority of them understand this situation. But the last round of elections, evolution was not a big issue. I mean, since the 2006 election, we've had a board majority that was supportive of strong science education.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2008, 2010, 2012, evolution has not been the issue it was in elections before then. We've been able to get a science savvy board and maintain it. That by itself would be partial support for the idea that Kansans have figured this out. And part of my motivation for mentioning to you that this might be a topic for a program is that. What I don't want is this suit to fly under the radar and this attack on good science education and not have the public involved. So, again, to the extent that you were right and Kansans have learned their lesson, that's part of why I thought this would be an interesting program, just to let people know that suit is out there. And once again, we're going to have to fight for a strong science education.
Yeah. Well, when you become the butt of jokes on Jay Leno's show and things like this, you know, I hope it's a little bit of an eye-opener. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's not particularly liberal or atheistic or anything, apparently.
I can tell you, in 2003, I was in France and was on a tour with a private guide of some of the prehistoric art caves.
Yeah.
And so we were about to go into this one cave, and our guide said, "So where are you guys from?" And we said, "Kansas." And she goes, "Kansas? Oh, my goodness. That's where you're all supporters of creationism, and you've been doing students a disservice by promoting the teaching of non-science." And but then she goes, "Well, there's this one organization in Kansas that's been fighting for the standards, and I've read some of the stuff their president put out." And, and Charlotte goes, "Well, you're talking to him right here." So the mood changed. All of a sudden, I was a hero. So that, but here we were in France, and we were catching grief for the actions of our school board. So that's partly why we want to be here. We want to support. In this case, we're not condemning the board. The board is a strong, science savvy, pro science education board. That's good. Want to support them in their efforts, and we want people not to fall asleep and have the board and Kansas suffer here.
Well, we got a tremendous surprise, and I had just moved to Kansas back in '99 when that first bad policy was passed, and we worked pretty hard to get people aware of what was going on, and then we got it turned around a little bit. But then a few years later,
the next election, two years later.
And then it happens again, and I guess people but of course we can't become complacent about these things, because the opposition is not complacent,
right?
There's no doubt about it.
Because even though this, to us, appears to just be a rehash of already settled legal principles, they think they've changed something. They have a new take on things, and they're going to run it up the flagpole again. So you're right. We can't go to sleep.
Yeah. And it seems like they're kind of they don't seem to be the monkey that realizes he's showing his butt. You know, they keep coming at it, and you would think that they would. I don't know whether it's just become a profession for some of them or what. You know, it's an obsession, at least. It may be a profession too. I don't know Calvert personally.
Calvert's retired. I think Calvert is a person motivated strongly by his beliefs.
Yeah.
I mean, he believes absolutely in what he's doing. And I don't think he's a charlatan in the sense that has ill intentions. I think his beliefs have disclouded his vision on this, and he's got tunnel vision, and no facts to the contrary are going to convince him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm like you. I'm afraid to make predictions about how these things will come out, and I certainly am a little bit alarmed when you think about the fact that judicial appointments by President Obama are being ignored or put off, and I think at one point, and it may be more now, I'm not sure, but 10% of the judiciary was missing, the federal judiciary, because Republicans would not act on appointments to the courts.
Yeah. Well, that is likely about to change, or is in the process with the actions of the Senate to change their rules on the
filibuster.
Certainly that is going to help America right now by allowing the Obama administration to fill in its court appointees and other administrative offices. I just have my doubts in the long term. It's once again, not working together for the benefit of the American public. It's Congress just being partisan. I think some immediate good's going to come of that, but we'll see the next time we have a Republican administration, whether this is still viewed as good for the American people. So,
Well, and the filibuster, we should note, has only been taken away for the regular judiciary appointments.
Right,
not the Supreme Court.
Right.
And I tend to think that, especially the way the Republicans reacted over this, I mean, they were just vicious in their reaction to this, especially, of course, Senator McConnell.
And but I think if the Democrats had been the minority party, they would have been just as vicious if this had been changed.
Yeah. Well, and the press kind of played along with the Republicans because they never really pointed out much that you know, the 10% of the judiciary missing right now,
right.
You know, because of lack of action on Congress.
And I've been disturbed by that. That's why I say it would seem to me this will be a great benefit to the American public immediately and in the near future, and I only hope that it stays that way.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure exactly how good appointments we'll get out of it. I hope we get good appointments out of it, but anyway, what I was fearing, though, in the Republicans' reaction is that, you know, that if they do come back to power, that, you know, that they would go farther than the Democrats and say, well, we won't filibuster.
I haven't checked, but I'm wondering if the reason that they didn't change that is because that may be mentioned in the Constitution in terms of something. So I don't know the answer to that. Or it may just have been that it was so extreme that they would catch unmerciful flack, so they just decided not to change it.
I'm not sure it's extreme to have a principle of democracy that the majority rules. I mean, it seems more extreme to say that the 40% rules. And that's what we've had.
Well, yeah. It's you know, our society is pretty nuanced, and the reason we need an independent judiciary is because we want the rights of the minority defended against the tyranny of the majority. If things are constitutionally guaranteed to us as citizens and we've enjoyed these freedoms, we don't want a partisan Supreme Court to be able to take those away very easily, right? So we need some guarantees of a system that doesn't just reflect the majority party. The minority parties have to be guaranteed some strength to have checks and balances, and part of that is an independent judiciary. And so I have been really disappointed and fearful how partisan the judiciary has been becoming. Mm-hmm. And predicting votes not based on legal principles, but based on ideological principles. It's what it appears to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, we probably are afield here. I did want to ask whether I overdressed today wearing this tux. It doesn't appear that the rest of you have that on.
Yeah, that wasn't necessary.
Okay, well, anyway, I feel good.
I haven't seen a Wildcat tux before either, though. So it's kind of easy. Anyway, it's been great to have you on, and we got to do a little final business here. This is our last show, and so we have to sign off in a sentimental way. Shall we be sentimental this morning?
Well, it has been my pleasure to be here, though.
Okay,
for your last show, I'm sorry it's your last show, but it's been a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, well, if we didn't have to get up at 5 o'clock on Sunday morning, we'd be willing to do more, but this has really gotten to be a little bit of a pain, and as a show that's kind of presented for atheists mainly, or free thinkers, that we kind of wonder how much effect we're really having on a Sunday morning. You know, I definitely would not get up at 7 on Sunday morning, except for a special reason, and I appreciate that there are people that think we're special enough to do that, and
There are a few people out there that set their alarm and listen to the show. I have tried, and I fall back asleep. It's hard to stay awake after I get woke up.
Yeah, and I, of course, can't necessarily say that I'm the best broadcaster in the world. I don't have a golden microphone like Rush Limbaugh or anything like that, but I have tried over the years to do my best to tell the truth and to learn the truth. I have not broadcast any of the right-wing conspiracy theories, as far as I know, and advocated them, or said that fracking caused the earthquake in Haiti, or various other demonstrably and patently false allegations that we have heard from other radio broadcasters. I've even heard over the air that Jewish doctors in Chicago are injecting black children with AIDS and stuff like that, and I didn't see any retribution against anybody for that. And I am a little hostile to religions and people who act irrationally and want other people to act irrationally. Otherwise, I might like the people involved, but the impact on society is so great that I think we should work against irrational claims, absurdly false claims, and demonstrably false claims. And that's what we've tried to do here. Now you can take God as an abstract idea, and I've said on this show and to many other people, you know, that I can prove the existence of God if you reduce God to an idea. Other people believe in some vague God and that I don't quite understand what they're thinking of exactly, you know, I just look at what they do in life and whether they're good people otherwise. I can appreciate moral and ethical thinking no matter who it comes from. I think I do. I don't call anybody terrible names just because they say they believe in God but if they say that, you know, that the society is going to hell, you know, because God is no longer in schools or something like that, well, first of all, God is in schools.
Yeah, right.
And not only illegally and unconstitutionally, but even if you do make a perfectly secular school, and I think that's what we should have, is a secular school. People can still carry their beliefs in there and not say that they've been indoctrinated just because they learned that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, approximately, and that life appears to have evolved on Earth, and that life has been around for probably 3.5 of those 4.5 billion years, but has evolved until we become conscious and can think for ourselves. So it's a matter of practical worth, and tried hard to advocate for humanistic principles, and there is religious humanism and there's secular humanism. I appreciate religious humanists as much as secular humanists, as long as they don't get too flaky on me. and try to impose their beliefs on me through a legal system or something like that. So I don't know. You know, I see so much manifestation of irrationality, especially religious irrationality, around that causes a lot of misunderstandings and I don't even see a lot of the believers practicing their faith very well. I mean, you know, when their main business gets to be taking from the rich and giving, or taking from the poor and giving to the rich, you have to kind of wonder whether they really are Christians, even though they loudly profess that they are. You have to wonder about just how ingenuous or disingenuous people are when it comes to those matters. And we've ventured into the political realm a lot over the years because...
Well, you like politics.
Well,
it's exciting.
I can't say that I like it because it's become so nasty and absurd.
Well, yeah.
But it's terribly important, and it manifests itself in so many profound ways that it's really a matter of ethics. You know, people have an ethical obligation to become aware and involved in politics and not many people are. You know, it seems like money is the whole gamut of it, because it's easy to spend money and buy PR people and professional politicians professional political operatives to get the job done. And we see just absolute fools in Congress, you know, where you should expect an institution that is sort of a pinnacle of wisdom and earnest intellectual effort, and we just see folly. And this is because of people's beliefs, basically. And they're not, they're either now, you know, there's two sides to it, and I'm always hesitant to decide whether somebody's a fool or a liar. But I think it comes down to, you know, somewhere between the two. You never can tell if somebody says that that there's a battle of Armageddon coming, and the red heifers in Israel are, you know, when the red heifers found in Israel, then, you know, Zion, you know, we got to convert all the Jews, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Some of those people may actually believe that, and some of them may be just using that to influence other people who are absolute fools. And it's always hard to tell which is which. There's a kind of in any religious organization, you have leaders and followers, and it's important to decide, you know, for yourself. I can't tell you who's the fool and who's the liar, but I know that there's a whole bunch of both out in the world, and I would hope that as the fools become enlightened, that you know, the liars will be put off into the sideshow and forgotten, or become less foolish and more responsible themselves. I think in a large way it's really a matter of defending territory. You know, there's 99% of the people in America have very little political power. 1% have so much wealth and property that they can't afford to buy people who will make sure that they have or maintain power. And I think that becomes more of a motivation than actual belief systems do in a lot of people. I was I frequently watch C-SPAN on TV, they have hearing, you know, Senate hearings or something like that. And I was watching a congressional hearing about the health care debate and some other things here a while back, and Joe Barton, a Republican from Texas. I mean, this guy's, he appears to be the fool that he talks like. And you kind of want, you know, you just have to say, well, if it wasn't for oil money, you know, billionaires and oil wealth and stuff like that, this guy wouldn't have a job. I mean, I wouldn't hire him if he had to come out and do something to actually make his way in the world in an honest way. You'd kind of wonder how he could do it. But there he is a congressman, and Inhofe, you know, a senator from, he's become a senator. He was a congressman working for the oil companies too, and he's written a book about the fraud, so-called fraud of climate change and things like this. You know, that these, and we know that you know, from what we learn from science, that, you know, there is such a thing as greenhouse gases. That the news on that lately has been that since fracking, there's been a lot more natural gas, you know, methane released into the atmosphere, which is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide even is, that, as we had suspected, and the science is starting to show that natural gas is starting to be much more of an influence than carbon, than carbon dioxide, but much more of an influence added to carbon dioxide. And when the permafrost in the tundra melts, and it will release more natural gas, and that's, you know, this is a problem that's going to profoundly affect billions of people, because so many people live within a dozen or two dozen miles of the coast all around the world, because that's, you know, where commerce takes place, and that's where The soil is more fertile and rain is more available and so forth. These things are going to have effects that we can't even imagine. We've seen the terrible catastrophe from Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Sandy, and then the Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines. It's done terrible devastation. It's like getting hit by a tornado. The darn thing was so strong that covered almost the entire archipelago of the Philippine Islands, and they didn't have a lot of concrete structures those are mostly poor people over there. They were having a hard time before the hurricane, before the typhoon. So these things are something we've tried to address, and I hope, and I know some, our listeners have appreciated that. I've heard some feedback now that people have gotten up and listened to the show, and I apologize that we're not going to be there for you. I wanted to try to get back on a weeknight, where we could have more listeners, where we could find it easier for people to listen to the show. That was not possible, but we appreciate being able to broadcast from KKFI for the time that we have. I've been doing this for over 20 years now.
20 years, is it? Wow.
And, I've had Gary and Greg helping me here for the last several years, and I appreciate your help, fellows, and I consider you friends, we did what we could,
right.
I think.
Right.
It's getting to be a burden now, so we're just going to quit, and maybe somebody else will step in and do what we've tried to do. Maybe they'll do better.
You bet.
It's possible for it to do better than we have. We can't say that it's not, but we thank you for listening, and we'll have a schedule of events now. You want to get in here and read this, Greg?
I've got a quick announcement, and then we'll get to that.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. Each Sunday at 10 a.m., the forum will feature a discussion on community issues. All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut Street, one block east of Main in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org.
This is the scheduled events, free thought events for this week. Today at about 8:15, there'll be a free thought breakfast at Chubby's on Broadway. At 9:45, the KC Midtown Freethinkers will be having their You Gotta Be Kidding Me event at Maya Yoga in downtown Kansas City. At 11:30 a.m., the Freethinking Family Fellowship will be having its second annual Ugly Ornament Contest and Cookie Bake Off. That's at a private residence in Liberty, Missouri. And at 1 p.m., the Community of Reason will be having its Sunday program. The topic today is Kriya Yoga, sorry if I mispronounced that, Mystical Practice for Everyday Living by Dr. Nora Kaysen, and that's in room 301 of Hague Hall at UMKC. On Monday at 7 p.m., the Lee Summit Freethinkers will be meeting at Next Door Pizza on Fascination Drive in Lee Summit. On Tuesday, December the 3rd at 4 p.m., the Midwest Skeptic Society will be having their Schmucks Have Drinks and Tacos at Danny's on College Boulevard in Lenexa. And at 6:30, the State Line Freethinkers Meetup will be hosting Eric Dollard with a book by Luis Granados entitled Damn Good Company. That's at Panera Bread on Mission Road in Prairie Village. And also at 6:30, the Kansas Citizens for Science will be hosting their president, Harry McDonald, and his wife, Charlotte, speaking on observations on Tanzanian animals, ecology, and culture. That's at Coaches, as was mentioned earlier, which is one block west of Antioch on 135th Street in Overland Park. On Wednesday morning at 8 a.m., the Kansas Free Thought Society will have their breakfast at the IHOP on 119th Street in Olathe. At 6:15 p.m., the Northland Freethinkers Meetup will be having meet and greet at Longboards in Liberty. And then on Saturday at 6:30 a.m., the Free Thinking Family Fellowship will be having their Ungodly Walking Hour at Westboro Canterbury Greenway in Liberty. And then next Sunday at 9:45 a.m., the KC Midtown Freethinkers will once again be having their You Gotta Be Kidding Me at Maya Yoga, downtown Kansas City. At 1 p.m., the Community of Reason will meet again at room 301 of Hague Hall at UMKC. And at 1:45 p.m., Northland Freethinkers will be having their Lazy Northland Readers event. Talk about whatever you're reading. That's at North Kansas City Library on Howell Street in North Kansas City. That is your Free Thought calendar for this week. Exact addresses and more details can be obtained by going to the respective group's meetup or website. And since we won't be presenting this again, that will also be a good source for these events if you'd like to follow up on them. And stay tuned for Psyche Talk, followed by Coffee House Radio Show, coming up here next at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And thank you very much for listening. We've enjoyed working for you over the years. And I'm Don Kimmerling.
Gary Pardon.
And I'm Greg Swartz.
And we will no longer be broadcasting your way, but we hope that you'll carry on and be reasonable. And thanks, Harry, for coming, Harry McDonald. And good day. We're going to listen to Sharpening Axes by Graham Parker on the way out.